And we have our next guest here. He's in the green room. We're going to call him up to the stage. Let's say it like this. I started getting into Mark Passio's work. It was over a decade ago. And I had an opportunity to go and film for him down in Yale, New Haven was the first event we filmed at. And I bring all the tripods. You know, it's like a multi-hour thing. And it was testing my skills. It was triggering my complexity because I'm like, I want to be able to capture this presentation. I want millions of people to be able to see this presentation. And eventually, after a lot of editing and clever cutting of like, I had to superimpose the slides on there because it wasn't showing up in the footage. There was a whole bunch of things we did for that first project. And it went so well, we did another one a couple years later. And it was my pleasure to spend many, many hours behind the editing desk to bring those out, because I think a lot of people, they need to know about Mark's work, and not enough other people are making media about what Mark's doing to get it out there. So every now and then I spot somebody, I'm like, their message needs a little amplification. They need some HD. They need some good audio. They need some good lighting. They need some good editing to really shine and showcase what is really impeccable and fine work. So over many, many years, I've appreciated Mark's work. I also have appreciated his work ethic, his diligence, his leadership, all these things that he brings to the table on a consistent basis. Mark, it is my pleasure to welcome you to today's very independent producer conference. How are you doing?
Richard, I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for inviting me to the conference. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. And I just want to say that I so much value all the work that you've done over the years. I consider you a peer and a compatriot. And thank you for having me here today.
Well, let's get into this topic of leadership, because I know that you've got more than 20 or 30 minutes on this topic. And then it's a big challenge just to be succinct for today.
Sure.
People like yourself and myself, we're more comfortable talking for 4 or 5 hours straight and, you know, let it flow. And these things are kind of like, oh, this is triggering our complexity to do it in time. So when you were young, where did you see some illustration or demonstration of leadership that made an impression on you, favorable or unfavorable?
I'd have to go back to my earlier childhood and say that my grandfather on my mother's side of the family, Lewis, was a great influence upon me in that regard, and taught me some basic skills of competency and attention, and instilled in me basic notions that I think underlie the qualities that are going to be inherent in a leader, in someone who is a way shower, someone who wants to inspire other people to follow in their footsteps and do work that is going to really change the world in a positive way. And he gave me the basic ideas of, if something is worth doing, take it seriously and follow through with it. Don't waste your time if you're not going to take it seriously. If it's something that is really worth doing, then it's worth doing well, and it's worth really putting your full effort into. The other thing that he really instilled in me at quite a young age was nothing is accidental or by chance. Everything ultimately has a cause or fundamental reason for existing. And you have to always look for the causal factor. You have to look for why it is that way. You don't just throw your hands up and say, well, that's how it is, and there's nothing we can do about it. He really basically showed me that there's not the amount of randomness and chaos in the world that people think that there is. And we're not the victims of circumstance. We are creating our reality in the aggregate sense collectively. And what we do is the underlying cause. Our behaviors are the underlying cause of what we experience in the world, because the universe actually reflects back to us what we put out into it like a huge mirror. That's really how karma works. And these were huge influences in my early childhood that really stuck with me throughout my entire life. Grateful for having had him as a masculine influence and a fatherly influence in my life, and to teach me those basic concepts about life. That's one of the things that began to help trigger my understanding that things aren't necessarily always as they appear, and we have to go down to a deeper underlying root cause if we're going to find out what's really going on. And I think those are definitely characteristics of leadership. They're at least ideological and philosophical characteristics of it. I think another thing that really deeply influenced me was I was identified in early, very early grade school, actually in the first grade when I was about 6 years old, by my first grade teacher in the Catholic school that I attended, as being extremely, extremely bored in class and not paying attention in class. Yet when she would ask me a question about any part of the curriculum, I had the correct answer because I had already gone through the entire, curriculum, the entire book beginning to end that they were still in the first chapter of in class, and I was immensely bored. And I wasn't creating a big disruption, but, she just noticed that I was bored and not paying attention and didn't really want to be there. And not because I, was a disruptive influence, as I said, but because I kind of already went through it. I was just quick to absorb information and the material of the class. So she called my mother into the school in the first grade and basically said, I think your son may have gifted capabilities as far as his intellect is concerned. We want to send him for testing. They did that and sent me to the Community College of Philadelphia for IQ testing. My IQ tested in the genius range, so they decided to take me out of my ordinary Catholic grade school for one day a week and send me to a specialized curriculum called the Mentally Gifted Program that they run here in Pennsylvania. I believe they still run it. But that made all the difference in my early childhood education because unlike traditional schooling, as the saying goes, never let schooling get in the way of your education. They really diverged from the traditional curriculum and taught critical thinking skills, which I think should be taught in every form of education, regardless of where it's being taught or who's teaching it. Obviously, they're not going to do that in public schooling. They have no vested interest in doing that, nor did they do that really in the Catholic school that I attended. But in this MG program, they definitely taught critical thinking skills. So that was a big part of my childhood development and definitely put me on the path of understanding how to think, not just being told what to think. And a teacher in that curriculum really stood out to me because he very much instilled the importance of knowledge and how knowledge should not only have we should have respect for it, but it should almost be held with a sense of reverence. And that was my teacher, Ted Ellerkamp, from the Mentally Gifted Program in Philadelphia. He definitely made a huge impression on me and, again, helped to instill what I consider to be some hallmark characteristics of leadership in my early childhood.
That's interesting because so I'm trying to put together like what years was that gifted program for you?
This would have been from about 1980 through 1988.
Yeah, right on. So I was on the other side of Pennsylvania in the same program, and that went on from like 1980 to 88. So I was writing down, I was trying to remember what did they teach us back then. There was logic, critical thinking,
that's right,
how to recognize propaganda. I had debate and mock trial and statistics. Those are the ones I remember doing, like that other kids didn't do that stuff.
We also did basic computing programming in our MG program. We learned technology skills very early on, back on Apple II computers, I remember.
Yeah.
And actually learning some basics of coding as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember also after that program, like I went through a typing. So after that, you do all this stuff with programming and computers and using the Apple II with the slanted, I remember those machines.
Those keyboards, yeah.
Yeah. Then like going back with the other kids and like doing their stuff, like it wasn't too challenging and it was still boring. So it was like, I learned to read before I went to school. So like when we're doing all that stuff, I'm like, I was bored too. And I wasn't disruptive either, but I would like, I'd be reading books. I would keep quiet and I'd keep to myself. And then eventually they're like, that's how the teachers get rid of us. They're like, okay, go be in this program and go with the other smart kids. And then, I always thought like, why is it that like, they can just skip over stuff for us? Like there was kids still taking reading in seventh and eighth grade. And I was already in like Latin II by then. And I'm like, why is it only like, I don't know. It just seemed unequal. Like I had access to stuff that other public school kids weren't getting access to. but maybe it's because I took it more seriously, the indoctrination process.
I think it's a big part of leadership is that a true leader, first and foremost, is going to take knowledge very seriously and is going to take real education very seriously. And whether we were in a program at that time, obviously not to our knowing, that is designed to indoctrinate, we still had a desire for knowledge. That was instilled in us at a young age. As you said, you were a voracious reader. Same with me. I was in a library from probably when I was like 3-4 years old, you know, 4 years old, probably going to the public library, checking out books, you know, reading at 5 and 6, taking home 10, 12 books and just, you know, immediately finishing them and then taking them back and getting 10 more. Like I did this throughout my entire childhood. So, you know, reading is a gigantic part of it. Like I consider that the base of leadership is knowledge. Like, you know, as I talk about in my work, there's three aspects to consciousness: our thoughts, our emotions, and our actions. That's how we can really truly express ourselves in the world. And the first aspect, thoughts, has to come to a culmination of knowledge. We have to hone our thoughts so that we can come to an accurate understanding of how our world works. So gaining knowledge is going to be one of the first primary hallmarks of true leadership. And you can't fake that, right? You can't fake that till you make it. You actually have to put in the time and the work and actually garner that knowledge and have that under your belt where people will know. They will be able to tell that you're not for real, that you're not genuine if you don't have the knowledge and skill sets that you claim to have. That's number one. Number two, in the emotion aspect, I consider true care and courage to be the emotional characteristics that we have to develop over our lifetime and really bring those to fruition. If we don't have a deep care over for what the truth is, then our actions aren't going to be guided in the correct direction. We have to have a care for what is right, you know, so that we align our actions to objective morality in the world. And we have to have courage, because if we don't have courage, which is the inward quality of will, we're never going to be able to develop the external quality of will to influence other people in the world as way showers or leaders, if you will. So courage is a gigantic aspect of it. And again, with that, the old saying goes, you possibly could fake it till you make it. You have to simply put yourself out there and not be afraid of the consequences. And you have to have faith that the universe is going to put you where you need to be. And you do not want to hesitate when it comes to that. You don't want to wait for orders from someone else. You don't want to delay and delay and delay because you're second guessing yourself or you haven't developed the self-confidence that you require to go ahead and put your information out into the world and let it be what it is and let people make of it what they will. But you're on your path, your own personal journey, and you're fulfilling your purpose in life. That's what leadership is ultimately all about. And, you know, without that courage, people are definitely going to be able to see through it. And, you know, you're not going to inspire them to want to follow in your footsteps. And then obviously, lastly, is action. And the characteristic that has to be developed there is persistence. You need consistency and persistence. You can't give up easily. If you're the kind of person that tries something and it doesn't quite work out and you give up easily, you're not going to go very far in these endeavors. You have to be tenacious. You have to be persistent. You have to lock your jaws onto something like a pit bull and never let go and say, I'm not going to let this go. I'm going to follow through with it. So many people in their early childhood are taught, well, if that's really difficult to do, just let it go and go on and do something that's easier and more enjoyable. That's really, really bad advice that usually comes in from parenting or adult influences around us when we're a young child. It's one of the worst things that can be taught to a child is to just let something go and give up. I fortunately was never taught that. I was taught if something is worth doing, do it all the way. Do it the right way. Take the extra time to do it the right way. Don't take shortcuts. That kind of a work ethic was very fortunately instilled in me. And I'm very grateful for that. While Of course, many of these people did not have the knowledge that needed to be developed to really truly decode the world and understand what was going on. I still have respect for what they taught me as far as work ethic and developing internal characteristics, because without that influence, I probably would not have become the person that I have become.
Okay, so it takes something that's hard for us to build those things. So what was hard for you that helped you build persistence and tenacity and doggedness and not going to quit? You're going to get this thing, you know?
I was very competitive in my childhood, and I liked playing sports when I was young, believe it or not. I liked all kinds of sports, but my favorite sport back then was baseball. So I was extremely competitive in baseball. I pitched when I was young. I always respected the Philadelphia Phillies player, Steve Carlton, probably the greatest left-handed pitcher of all time. I'm left-handed, so I kind of wanted to be like Steve Carlton. So I pitched when I was playing Little League. And then into high school. I think sports taught me keep trying to give your all and don't give up. Being competitive is actually very healthy. And a lot of parents don't instill that in their children, and they teach them all everybody's just equal. There's no winners or losers. They don't instill them wanting to be better than themselves the day before through competitiveness. It's a healthy form of competition. Not wanting to be cutthroat against your fellow human being all the time, but just having a competitive spirit and wanting to improve yourself and others is a very healthy dynamic. I also was always very, very big into swimming and into the ocean, doing body surfing, biking, all kinds of activities that really develop your will and develop your sense to want to keep going and keep giving of your energy. And then, of course, I took education and schooling seriously and wanted to be competitive there and get top grades. And, I was always just trying to sharpen my not only skill sets, but bodily skills as well, through competitiveness. So that helped a lot in childhood as well. And that was encouraged. It was not put down. People never told me I couldn't. They said, if you put your mind to it, you can accomplish it. You could do what you want. You could do anything if you work hard enough at it. That was the ethic that was instilled. And again, I'm grateful for that.
Yeah. Whether you think you can or you think you can't, I believe you.
You're correct.
Right.
Yep.
And so physical tasks that like playing sports, right? Pitching, that's a repetitive thing where you have to buckle down. It's not going to all happen in one day. It's an iterative process. There was one time I had a perfect game until the last inning, and I had one out and the dude hit a home run.
Wow.
And I just walked to center field. I'm like, I'm not pitching.
Yeah. That teaches you humbleness. Yeah. I actually attended a game in Philadelphia Veterans Stadium when I was young, where the opposing team's pitcher had a no-hitter going into the bottom of the ninth inning, and the Phillies got two outs, and everybody's on their feet cheering the opposite team's pitcher because they wanted to see him throw the no-hitter, and one of the Phillies got a hit with two outs in the bottom of the ninth inning, and the whole stadium booed their own team for breaking up the no-hitter, and I was kind of laughing. I was like, that's what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to try to break up the no-hitter. You can't boo that guy and give him a hard time for that. He's doing his job,
Yeah, there was a lot of psychological pressure on that batter for him to execute, hit the sphere with the cylinder at that speed.
Yep.
Hats off to him.
It's concentration and continuance of effort. In the great work, in the great spiritual work, there's the saying, constant effort, okay? Just pure will and applying that continually, never letting off that gas pedal. And that's what we really need in us. We have to have a stick-to-itiveness. We have to have a never say die attitude. It's why my outro music of my podcast is the Black Sabbath song, Never Say Die. Always resonated with me. It talks about how, the world is the way that it is because people aren't seeing what's going on and paying enough attention. And it's saying we can't give up. We have to have a never say die attitude. And that's been one of my mantras in life.
Now, is that Ozzy Black Sabbath or Ronnie James?
It's Sabbath. Yeah. Okay, with Ozzy. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I just want to make sure that was clarified.
Never Say Die album. Yes.
And then on your tip on competition, I think also competition is very healthy and it helps people raise their game. And the boundary is when you have to breach your integrity for that competition, that's when it's a diminishing return and like nobody should be doing it.
That's right. Absolutely. Never, never compromise morality. You have to stick to what is right at all times and places, even if it's the hardest thing to do, even if you suffer in the short term. You have to stick to objective morality and natural law and never compromise those as your guiding principles and values. Without any question or any shadow of a doubt, that is completely and utterly true.
All right. Now, for people in the audience who haven't had leadership demonstrated in their lives and they haven't had a mentor and they haven't had, what can you offer as wisdom for them to take with them to tell them that they can do it too?
Well, I would say the first thing you have to understand is that you do have to develop skill sets and qualities and be able to offer them in a practicable way in the very real world. And what I try to help people do is hone their technology wielding capabilities, because in the modern world, if you're going to influence others in a leadership capacity, especially with ideas and philosophy, which is ultimately what's going to change our world, you have to have communication skill sets and you have to have publishing skill sets. If you don't know how to communicate to other people, you're sunk from the beginning. And if you don't know how to publish that communication in a wide way through multimedia, through the internet, which is our form of the dissemination of information in the modern day, then your information isn't going to go very far. It's going to stop with you or a few people that you can tell it to by word of mouth, and that's going to be the end of it. It's not going to be what I call formalized and immortalized. That's what we have to do with our information. And in order to do that, under your belt, you must possess the skill sets of communication and publishing. And those are technical skill sets in the modern world. Yes, they start with the ability to speak and communicate effectively. First of all, take in information effectively, process it correctly, and then decide you're going to do the right thing with it. But once those internal characteristics are solidified, you need the external characteristics of having physical skill sets to be able to communicate and publish in the modern technological era. And to that end, I offer the How to Become the True Media seminar, where I teach potential content creators the basics of the skill sets that they're going to require to do that type of outreach educational work to be able to communicate and publish in the digital media space. It's called How to Become the True Media. It's a 6-month seminar that I offer 6 months of the year, every year, once a year. Enrollment opens on April 1st every year, and the seminar runs from July all the way through to December. So that's one of the main ways that I go about helping other potential leaders develop their skill sets that they're going to need in reaching out to other people in an educational capacity.
You've also got a conference coming up, Two Masks, Same Face. This is over on whatonearthishappening.com. Can you tell me, what date? Let's go get that on.
Sure. I've been developing this full day conference like event. It's a full day presentation called Two Masks, Same Face: The Dark Occult Origins of Nazism and Communism. People see these as diametrically opposed political opposites on the left and the right, when what I'm postulating and going to give lots of examples and a lot of data regarding is that these are basically two flip sides of the same root religion. And we have to understand Satanism in particular and dark occultism in general as some of the underlying motivating forces that are actually guiding our world in the direction that it is going, unfortunately. And I'm going to show how these are not diametric opposite political ideologies, but they are actually two factions of the same ancient religion.
Yeah.
In my thesis, this presentation coming up October 21st of this year, so just over a month and a couple of weeks. It's going to be an all-day event from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., a 12-hour event. There's going to be a couple of breaks, but my main presentation is going to be about 8.5 hours probably during that time period. It's going to be in Exton, Pennsylvania, which is a maybe about 20 minutes from my my current location here in southeastern Pennsylvania. And it's a beautiful conference center and hotel. And you can get more information at whatonearthishappening.com, my main website. I have all of my podcast material up there that I've taught over the years, many, many, many video presentations, many interviews that I've done since I've been doing this work since approximately 2007. And you can go there for all of the work that I have put out thus far, whatonearthishappening.com. And if you so choose, you can get tickets to the upcoming presentation, Two Masks, Same Face: The Dark Occult Origins of Nazism and Communism, October 21st in Exton, Pennsylvania.
So only 12 hours.
It's only 12 hours.
It's only 12 hours, and your presentation is only 8 hours. All right.
It's going to be about 8.5 hours if I calculated it correctly.
I love it. I love long form content, and I love to be inspired by other people making longer form content than what I'm doing. So if I can't be there personally, I do have family there, so there's a chance I can actually go to this. I'd be excited to be there in person for this. And
Well, Richard, just let me know. You could be my guest there. Absolutely. At any time, just, let me know that you're coming or on the way, and we will have a place reserved.
I'll be there to change the batteries in your slide clicker halfway through the presentation, boss.
No worries. I appreciate it.
Mark, thank you so much for taking time out of your Saturday afternoon. I know you have a busy afternoon, so well done. I think you dropped a lot of wisdom in that short period of time. And just keep in mind, if there's a time you don't want to do an 8-hour presentation, like, these shorter form things, they work for you too.
They do. Absolutely.
They're very dense.
Richard, thank you so much.
Thank you. Peace. All right. So now I did get this button working over here. So let me go over here. Again, his conference is Two Masks, Same Face: The Dark Occult Origins of Nazism and Communism, a special all-day presentation by Mark Passio. And if you have not been there in person for an all-day presentation, I highly recommend it. October 21st, 2023, it's in Pennsylvania. If you can't make it there, maybe we'll figure out how it streams online and such things.